Listen up, people. Over the years, I've learned how important hydration is in my workouts and everyday life. It's the key to helping my body move, recover, and just have a good time when I'm exercising and staying active. Things go even better when I'm well hydrated before I even start moving. Noom Hydration doesn't want you to wait to hydrate. They want you to start hydrated. Noom Sport Hydration Tablets hydrate better than water alone. Just drop them in your water, dissolve, and enjoy. They contain 5 essential electrolytes and come in crisp and refreshing flavors like strawberry lemonade, lemon lime, and many more. They also have non-GMO vegan and gluten-free ingredients and only 1 gram of sugar. Noom hydrates you so you can do more, go further, and recover faster. And that means you can have a heck of a lot more fun. Since hydrated humans have the most fun, head over to shop now on noonlife.com and pick some up today so you're ready for anything, because anything can happen after noon.
The South Dakota Stories, Volume 5. South Dakota seemed like the perfect place to unplug, but I ended up connecting to the world around me, a world where each sunset was painted, where I felt adventures pulse with every step, and where cold water trickling, pine swaying, and grunting bison became my favorite soundtracks. I just wish I didn't have to leave. There's so much South Dakota, so little time.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
The living room is where you make life's most beautiful memories. But your sofa shouldn't be the one remembering them. The new life-resistant, high-performance furniture collection from Ashley is designed to withstand all the spills, slip-ups, and muddy paws that come with the best parts of life. Ashley high-performance sofas and recliners are soft, on-trend, and easy to clean. Shop the high-performance furniture in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.
Welcome to the Weekly Squeak, your weekly geeky squeak with me, Chris Chinchilla. A roundup of interesting tidbits from the internet that caught my attention every week. This week is a little tech heavy. What caught my eye this week. And there's no interview, so a short show just of some Lincoln roundups. And I'm arranging some new interviews as we speak, so expect more of those soon. First, I've got two articles that are just a collection of tools that you might be interested in downloading and playing with. The first one is on opensource.com from Dan Baker. I have been trying for some time to teach myself natural language processing. I've got a couple of Twitter bots that some of you may have found, which are basically just random string generators, and I'd really love to make them smarter with natural language processing. And I've been thinking of a couple of generative fiction projects that would also use natural language processing. So I've been slowly trying to learn the techniques and understand some of the tools. So this was a really nice tool on opensource.com of 12 open source natural language processing tools. And these are split down into languages. So Python is overrepresented as always, which is common in natural language processing. I guess there's a few tools here that anyone who is familiar with the space would probably know. Maybe a few others too. And there's also some tools for Node and for Java, 12 that you might like to plug into your language of choice, and join me on learning natural language processing too. Next, and I definitely will reassure you here that I'm not being paid to advertise this. We have no ads on the show at the moment. I have for some time on my Mac and my iPad, although I don't use iPad too much for work, been using a great email application called Spark from a company called Readle, quite sure how they pronounce it. I have really liked this. I've tried lots of alternatives to Apple Mail and never really found anything that was worthwhile enough, or they were always just sort of web interfaces, not really native applications. I like proper native applications. And I came across Spark. Not only is Spark just good as a mail replacement, it's also really good for collaboration. You have shared inboxes, you can share drafts, you can discuss an email before sending it, you can delegate emails, you can connect to various to-do management services and all sorts of things. And on the plan that I'm on, and I have one other collaborator, it's free. But the main piece missing for me was an Android version. I use an Android phone. And I signed up to their tell me when you're going to release list, not really expecting to hear from a while, and Spark for Android got released. It's still early. There's still a few things that are odd and not very Androidy, but these guys are iOS and Mac developers first and foremost, so give them time, I suppose. But I am super pleased to finally have it. And a lot of other people are also giving it rave reviews. And I reached out to the creators on Twitter just to say thank you, and discovered they are a Ukrainian company, which anyone who's been following my writing would also know that I regularly, well, I don't regularly write about Ukraine, I've only done it twice, but I'm a fan of Eastern Europe and a lot of companies over there, and I recently have written a few articles about Ukraine. So it was quite interesting to hear that they are from that area. I think the founder is from Odessa. I guess they have teams in Ukraine and in America. But great application. If you are a mixed household or a mixed office, then now, apart from Windows support, you are mostly covered. So great to hear. Now a slight detour into, well, we're staying in the technical space, but something slightly more esoteric, shall we say. This is from a blog called Klagnut, which is the blog of Richard Rutter. I'm not sure. He talks about being in Austria, so I'm feeling like I should pronounce that the German way. And this is an article entitled All You Need to Know About Hyphenation in CSS. And I find this quite interesting because I actually started a lot of my computing career in desktop publishing. So did learn through Quark Express and then latterly InDesign about hyphenation and typography. Well, not in any great detail. I wasn't a designer. I was doing tech support, but I learned about it. I learned a lot about fonts and ligatures and kerning and all these sorts of things. In the early days of CSS, you didn't really have much control over this, or I guess you felt like you didn't need it, maybe. I'm not sure. But CSS actually has now really good support for all sorts of typography, hyphenation, and other fine-grained controls. And I even recently discovered a Unicode symbol for a non-breaking hyphen, which was very, very obscure. And if you look at it rendered next to a normal hyphen, they look identical but do very different things. The non-breaking doesn't break a hyphenated word over a line, whereas the normal one does, which may be niche, but has its uses, as we discovered. And this is a wonderful article talking about how to kind of control hyphenation in CSS to get, I guess, the sorts of text layouts that we used to spend hours playing with in Quark and InDesign. So it was a bit of a trip down memory lane for me, even though it was into a different domain. So if typography is your thing, if fine-grained web design is your thing, if you dream of the days when developers did what designers told them to do and not the other way around, then you may enjoy this article. And now my typical little trip down to Blockchain Corner, an article on Hacker Noon from Noam Levinson, called Did the Cryptocurrency Revolution Fail? And I must admit, I mean, I work in the space, but I'm always skeptical, always pragmatic. I think that's the best way to be with technology crazes and fads and trends. But articles like this sometimes are a little biased. They're often written by fans of a technology, and they kind of use the title to draw you in and then really try to convince you that, well, it didn't fail. So maybe the title is slightly misleading because the writer definitely tries to put a positive spin on things. But there are some interesting numbers. There are actual numbers and statistics that you can read through and sort of make your own mind up about whether you think cryptocurrency and blockchain has been a success over the past year. And I suppose it's interesting because some of the numbers that he uses in the article seem high, but in the grand scheme of things, are they? So that's something to bear in mind. They're higher when compared to previous years of blockchain and cryptocurrency, but are they high compared to things like Kubernetes or Docker or other more traditional, in quote marks, open source projects? Have a read, and I'd love to hear your comments on whether you think this article justifies the title, the leading title, or not? Has it failed? Is it failing? Or is it now in a growth year and the hype cycle is over? I would love to hear your feedback, and I'll tell you how you can give me that at the end of the show. Next, I am going to lump a bunch of articles sort of loosely into the tech ethics category. Not necessarily ethics, but looking at the other sides of tech, looking at tech, should they have done that? Looking at how we can improve tech, things like that. And I guess I'm doing this because myself and Nicholas Borsato of the Good Technology Collective are starting our new Tech and Ethics newsletter in the next week. You can go along and sign up right now. At the moment, the best place to do that is christiangillett.com/newsletters, and you should see the list of newsletters I'm currently publishing, and you can sign up there. And we'll start getting things out very soon. And articles like this, that I don't always mention on this main weekly Squeak show, but sometimes do, will be appearing there. We're going to be mostly just selecting articles we found interesting, and once a week there will be a newsletter, and the feed will sort of constantly update, so you can find a curated list there, basically. And we may turn that into a podcast at some point. Who knows? First, an article that caught my eye on the AngelList blog, an article about Drupal from Angela Byron, the community lead there, or web chick, if you are familiar with Drupal. I used to be very heavily involved in the Drupal community. Not so much anymore, not at all anymore, actually. But there's been a lot of criticism of its community, and whilst this article is mostly positive about the Drupal community, there have certainly been high-profile falling outs. But the community has kept going nonetheless. And has mostly been very encouraging in terms of diversity, but also in terms of recognizing the efforts of non-coders. And they've managed to do this because they have their own sort of platform that builds upon the typical tools like GitHub and Git repositories to be able to recognize the efforts of community managers, of documentation people, of people who organize talks and sort of marketing efforts and things like that. And I do remember them having this discussion about how that was going to happen when I was involved in the community. So it's good to see that it is somewhat paying off and having results. And I guess some of the criticisms of the community has often been that the same people stay in the kind of positions of responsibility or of power, in quote marks, for quite some time. And Webchick, Angie, is no exception. She has been there for quite some time, as have some of the other people. And a lot of them often work for the same companies. I guess this is a double-edged sword. Having the same people means you can start to build consistency and kind of get things happen, but it also means you can get a little bit maybe blinkered in your thinking. Not sure. I guess at the moment for Drupal it's mostly working. I would also argue that the project and the platform itself is maybe not as big as it used to be. I don't have any numbers to support that, but just on what you hear and the general trend of CMSs. And she recommends a few tips that have worked in her experience. One is a code of conduct, which a lot of projects now have, and if you don't, it's so easy to at least add, then I don't see any reason why you shouldn't. Of course, enforcing a code of conduct is a different conversation, and that's harder. So it's worth bearing in mind that if you're going to implement one, you should think about how you're actually going to enforce it, should you need to as well. Then creating a diverse group of leaders, and the Drupal project definitely has that. And this could be elevating people to a position of responsibility for a subject that maybe you hadn't considered needed as much help as it did, or you hadn't considered making a priority before. But if someone is very passionate about something, they can be the best person for overall leadership and not just the sort of individual subject they're interested in. And she also has a few other tips there. So I'd recommend you pop over to the AngelList blog and have a look. And I must admit, that was an interesting place to see the post as well. AngelList is typically kind of startup and VC focused, and it was an interesting place to see an article like this. Next is an article from Angela Chan on The Verge. And this, I started discussing this with some friends in a private chat, and we got some interesting opinions actually. This is an article on prisons in Finland, and prisons in Scandinavia are notoriously progressive, so I'm not surprised that they're trying it here first. Inmates in prisons are training artificial intelligences as part of prison labour. This is, it's strange, I guess it's not really much different from Mechanical Turk or something like that. The conversation around forced labor in prisons is a difficult one, whether you think it's something that should happen or not. But if it is going to happen, is it better to give people skills that are going to be more useful to them outside of prison life, as opposed to sort of physical labor or the kind of labor that prisoners are often given? Are there even any good jobs in training AIs apart from things like Mechanical Turk? It's sort of interesting, and this is, I guess it should be added that this is still very much a trial project. It's only really one company trying this with a handful of prisons in Finland. It's not a widespread activity yet, but it's an interesting discussion to have, actually. If someone is in prison and has time to contribute something in the form of work, A, should they? B, can they do the kind of digital menial work, things like this? Or should it always just be physical menial work? It's an interesting discussion. Depending what they're training, are they going to colour the AI biases? This is another interesting aspect that isn't really covered in the article, but is having prisoners training in artificial intelligence a good idea? Are we going to have artificial intelligences with certain opinions on things that maybe mainstream society doesn't accept or not? So, yeah, this is a topic I'd love to hear your opinions on. Yet again, I will let you know how at the end of the show. And wrapping up this little section are two articles from Wired. The first is from Clive Thompson on coders. I like the word to use, so I'm going to quote them. Primeval urge to kill efficiency everywhere. And I certainly notice this a lot. I know a lot of coders who will eat and drink food replacements so they don't have to think about eating, wear the same clothes all the time so they don't have to think about that. And all these strange little quirks that they can focus on the task in hand. And I guess I would also argue that sometimes that task in hand is not really that important, but it is to them. Where this stems from, we could argue endlessly about programmers and their mental makeup, maybe, but let's save that for another conversation. And this is a fascinating article about a coder called Jason Ho and his efforts to streamline everything and the ways he says algorithms and spreadsheets to analyze almost every decision in life and how much time should be spent on it, is it worth pursuing, etc., etc. To a point of extreme in cases, but I could see some of the benefits of this. I think you'd have to have a very understanding partners, and in the space of the article, the partner he does have doesn't stay with him, so so maybe they had enough. It's hard to say. I find this aspect of coders and some of the coders I work with quite interesting. I do it myself a little bit, I must admit. Not to these levels of extremity. Is it healthy? Does it mean that a programmer reduces every kind of decision to an algorithm? And not all decisions can be reduced to an algorithm. Some decisions involve humans who don't always match algorithms. Things like this. I would argue that attitudes like this sometimes lead to some of the strange programming decisions that we sometimes find ourselves exposed to. And I've covered many of these, and I'm about to cover another one, maybe, in my next article. And maybe the previous article was somewhat related as well. So yeah, is utmost efficiency actually a good thing? Is an efficient life, is efficient society a good thing? Or is it cold? Is it calculated? Is it not reflecting the multifaceted messiness of humanity? Again, answers on a postcard to the usual details, please. And finally, another article on Wired from Alex Palmer. I guess rounding off this subject a little bit into areas where programmers are involved without actually thinking about, is it a good idea, about the lives they are ruining. This is this trend that is much more common in the US of robocallers. And I think I also mentioned some time ago the two-part podcasts from Reply All and tracing down a particular, actually it wasn't really robocalls, it was more call centers in India. They have also covered robocalls, so you can hear some more around the topic there. It's not really a problem we get here in Germany that much. It's much more prevalent in the US. But this is an expose, and it claims to be part one of two. I'm not sure what part two is going to be about yet, where they dig into finding the behind-the-scenes story of a very prevalent robocall organizer? I don't know. It's Svengali? I'm not quite sure what to call them. A particular fellow named Adrian Abramovich. And the investigation was mostly the responsibility of a staff member at TripAdvisor who was sick of, whose company was sick of fake calls, fake reviews in the name of the company. But it turned out that the FCC, the Federal Communication Commission in the US, had also been doing similar investigations, and so their research overlapped. And how, as is typical, it was a human engineering. Members of staff from certain robocall places in Mexico were posting pictures of themselves in their offices in Facebook and things like that. So, you know, as always, the weakest link is typically a human doing something they hadn't thought about, and someone is able to join the dots. It's an interesting dig into it. It also kind of has a lot of aspects of thinking about. So Adrian himself complains that he's not really been given space to give his side of the story, whatever that side may be. I guess here we have the argument of, I was just doing my job, but I guess in a job like this, you kind of know what you're getting into. You know, it's an interesting conversation to have, of course. I've had this this discussion myself many times, like, do programmers who work in weapon systems, can they really defend what they do? If you're working for a weapons company, you kind of know what you're doing. But if you're interested in digging in, I recommend you read the full story. It's about a 20-minute read, so a little bit on the longer side. And you can go and then have a bit of a follow-up, listen to some of the robocall and call center episodes on Reply All, which is a podcast I love listening to anyway. That was my roundups of links for the week. I have quite a lot of travel coming up. So if you go to christianchillett.com/events, you will find those. Beginning next week, I'm off to Sydney for EdCon and then heading down to Melbourne just to catch up with friends and family and home. So if you happen to be in Melbourne for any particular reason, we can also hang out. I have plenty of opportunities to hang out. Then I'm going to be in Hong Kong briefly. I'd love to meet tech people in Hong Kong, actually, at the beginning of May. Once I get back, May is a very busy time. I have now added a date to, I'm going to be at Latitude 59 in Tallinn in Estonia, back in the startup capital of the Baltics. That'll be interesting. Quite excited about that. And then many other events also coming up through to the beginning of June. So if you happen to be around Europe, then have a look at my events page and you'll find quite a lot of places we can meet up. In the past week, we also put out a latest episode of the Write the Docs podcast, where we spoke with Becky Todd about career advancement as a technical writer, which was a good episode. And we got quite a lot of feedback. And also one of the co-hosts published our show numbers recently. It's on the Write the Docs Slack. So if you're not a member of that, then I'm not entirely sure how you're going to see them. But it was interesting to see that we've gathered quite a good listenership, actually, more than we expected. A little bit up and down depending on topic, of course, but bigger than we expected, and we get very little feedback. And this is often the thing. You think that means no one's listening, but people are. So I hope you have enjoyed this show. If you are listening, please share, rate, review wherever you listen to the show. Please drop me a message if any of the articles and topics tickled your opinion gland. I don't know. I should have stopped long ago with that analogy. I'm not sure where I was going with that. You can find my contact details at christianchillett.com/contact. Twitter is a good one, at Chris Chinch. And you can also support the show at /support merchandise. I've got some new stickers coming out soon. So if you'd like some of those, join my mailing list and I will send you some stickers soon. But in the meantime, as always, if you have been, thank you very much for listening.
Whether you're a morning person or a bedtime procrastinator, everyone deserves a mattress that works for their style. And you'll find the best mattress for you at Ashley. The new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley brings you one-of-a-kind body-conforming technology, making every sleep tailored to be your best. The collection also features cool-to-the-touch covers and motion absorption to help minimize sleep disruptions from partners, pets, or kids. Shop the all-new Tempur-Adapt collection at Ashley in-store or online at ashley.com. Ashley, for the love of home.